Please pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, blessed Master, dearest Mother, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Amen. This week on July the 3rd, in India they celebrate Guru Purnima Day, which has a special emphasis on sage Vyasa, reading out of Master's introduction into the Bhagavad Gita. As Ganga is spiritual or consciousness aspect of nature, as intelligence, Satyavati is the aspect of primordial nature as matter. From Satyavati evolve the forces that coalesce into the manifested universe and its sensory thinking active beings. Here, the first expression or offering is Vyasa. In order to conceive creation, God must cloak his consciousness in relativity, i.e., the singular reality must project the idea of duality and the discriminating power to perceive and discern differences. This is Vyasa allegorically. Read that again. Here, the first expression or offering is Vyasa. In order to conceive creation, God must cloak his consciousness in relativity, i.e., the singular reality must project the idea of duality and the discriminating power to perceive and discern differentiation. This is Vyasa. The other two sons of Satyavata are Chitrangada and Vitravya, divine primordial element and divine ego, respectively. According to Samkhya philosophy, the first of the 24 principles of creation is referred to as Mahatattva, the primordial element, the basic inclusive mental consciousness, or Chitta. This is the conscious awareness or feeling, the primordial element, precipitately degenerates into constitutional parts. Symbolically, Chitranga dies at an early age. The first transformation is the sense of I or ego as the experiencer. The pure or divine ego of the causal body of man, which individualizes the soul from spirit. Now, these are wonderful teachings, and so that we don't get lost in all of the words of it all. Here we see that Satyavati is this primordial aspect of spirit as nature. And indeed, we are told that when creation comes about, it is a blissful ananda expression of God. But yet, in our own human experience, we don't oftentimes see it as a blissful expression. And the reason is because then, as this blissful expression goes out, then there becomes that part that can cognize the reality, the highest aspects of God, but also the relative or the shadow, the dark aspects that get part of creation. You can't have a play unless you have this kind of differentiation. Otherwise, it's all God. If you think about going to the movies and there's no film in the projector, and the projector shows only a white, pure light, and this is what is in truth going on behind the scenes. But once you begin to feed the film into it, then you begin to get, in the beginning it was black and white expressions, and then eventually came color and sound and all the rest of it. And so then you have a play. Otherwise you just have pure white light. And so God wanted to experience himself as the play. And as individual particles of God, we too wanted to experience this creation as individualized particles. But if you are one with God completely, and there is no sense of individuation or separation, then you can't experience the play. And so we come into this creation with that notion, with that idea. And divine consciousness, wisdom, said, experience it as that one who is the observer, the witness of everything that occurs. And Vyasa represents that. Now, it's very interesting because Satyavati has, in the beginning, the smell of fish. In fact, she is born of a being who has been sentenced to be a fish. And this fish theme is something that is familiar here in the West, because early Christianity had the fish symbol. Now, Jesus was born in Pisces in terms of the different yugas or ages that are going through. But it is not just that. As Mother had in her own experiences, that this Christ seed came down through her own physical system and came up through the spine and finally came up to the throat area. And in the throat area, she felt it in the throat. And it, eventually she worked on it and worked on it and worked on it, and eventually it came up into the mouth, and then she was able to have this Christ seed that actually physically manifested in her own hands. And she described it as a styrofoam-type substance, a capsule. And when she broke open that capsule, there was one perfect drop of blood in the center of that capsule. And this was the blood and the body of the Christ, something that is given as the Eucharist in the Catholic Church and most of the Protestant churches. And this was the inner experience, you see. When Mother gave me the title of Yogacharya, she had said that I had been through nearly every experience that she had been. And I had this Christ seed come up into my throat area. And I worked on it for several years to get it to come out into the mouth. And I never had the experience that she did, where it came into the mouth and where she held it in her own hands and then swallowed it back in as a performance of this ritual that has come down through the ages. And so the thought that I have had is that it did work its way up, but then it automatically was swallowed back down. I didn't have that experience, and that's why she said I had nearly every experience that she had. She also had the baptism of blood, and I had that as well, where this tremendous pain in the heart is the releasing of the consciousness from the physical body, and then you feel it transferred over onto the right side, so that a fool's heart is on its left and a wise man's on its right. And this is the transference into the astral being more completely in this crucifixion experience. These are tremendous things. And if we follow this path, we will be taken through all the experiences that are necessary. Now, everything that Mother went through is not necessarily what we individually will have to go through. It depends on the individual and their complex makeup of karma and exactly what they've been through. If you've been through part of these experiences in previous lifetimes, you don't have to repeat them if you did not go through a degenerative period. If you fell off of the path during that upward climb, and there are many that do, it's been fascinating to watch those who have had this kundalini activated within them and how few make it all the way to the top. That there are various temptations that come along in your path and they're really powerful. And it's not that you never make a mistake. You will make mistakes. But that you recover and that you put yourself right back onto the path with greater determination than you ever had before. This is absolutely essential. There's the story of the tortoise and the hare, and sometimes that's very true. Sometimes people take off in a great hurry, and they want it all. And that's a good thing. Nothing wrong with that. But they're not long-lived. They don't have it for the long haul. You have to be able to have the endurance. You have to have something deeply awakened inside of you that will keep you on to the spiritual path to the very end, to the very death of yourself. Now, there are some who will say, I would do anything. I would die gladly in order to have this state of realization until that moment of testing comes to them. And when that test comes, they turn away from it. They don't endure. They don't go on in faith. And because of that, they are swept away by the currents of this world. There are many who have gotten swept away in the currents of sexuality because there is a certain point where this tremendous force comes up inside of you, this tremendous sexual temptation, and it wants to take you with it. And at that time, and when it comes as this spiritual experience, you have to stand firm against that because it represents the oppositional force at this point. It's not romance. It's not anything of uplifting nature or beauty. It's just pure raw lust that comes in. And it wants what it wants. Now, there's a wonderful technique that God gave to me. And it's something that you can employ at this time, in fact, at all times. But down at the second chakra, if you just think of being down in the lower regions, the first 2 inches of the base of the spine, and you imagine there, you image with your mind that there's a trap door. And that trap door currently is closed. And then when it springs open, all of that life energy that has been channeled into the first 2 chakras is freed up. And it puts tremendous pressure upon the sexual nerves, and that creates the temptation. And when that sexual energy is released, up it goes, up the spine. It goes to the heart center. It goes up to the third eye point. It goes up to the top of your head. And there you experience a spiritual freedom, an upliftment, a transformation of that energy that had been channeled through the sexual nerves and now it's being brought up into the very fine nerves of the ajna and the sahasrara at the top of the head. And this represents the highest and best use of your life energy. Now, as Mother oftentimes said, when quoting St. Paul, that the marriage bed is undefiled, and there is a time when we should have that experience and know the fullness of what sexual closeness and intimacy can represent. So we know what it is, and there's no real mystery about it in the sense of not knowing it. There are those who become celibate in life, and they've not really either transformed that energy, and perhaps they haven't really experienced it, so it always remains someplace in the back of their mind. as something to have, something that is an alluring to them. And as a result of that, it will guide them off the path. And they made a commitment, and with everything inside of them, with all good will, they made that commitment towards a celibate life, but they really weren't ready for it. And as a result, they can do more damage. And so it is better to find somebody that is a true partner in life, somebody that you can really grow with in a physically, materially, spiritually, emotionally, every level, until that energy is lifted up, it's transformed, it's made into something new. You have a new body in Christ. So this Satyavati has this fish smell until she is blessed by this saint who comes into her life, and it is, in fact, spiritual current that comes in, and it transforms this fish-like smell that this capsule has. That's what Mother smelled when she broke open this capsule, had a fish-like smell to it before she swallowed it. And so there is the symbol of the fish, you see. And then she takes on this musk-like, beautiful aroma, Satyavati does, after she is blessed by this saint. And out goes creation. Out goes creation. And so in this nature then, this wonderful saint that we honor on Guru Purnima Day, Vyasa, is a product of that transformation that goes on of this Christ seed. And he becomes the fullness. But you see, Purnima means full. And it has to do, it relates to the full moon. Now the full moon is wonderful in its symbolic value. It's different than the sun. The sun is always whole. It's always complete. Now we've had a lot of cloudy days these days, so we don't always know it because it's hidden. And God's Spirit is like that too. It can become hidden by the clouds of delusion. But the moon goes through these predictable cycles all through the month. And it's a new moon when it's totally dark. And then we see a crescent moon and gradually a half moon and then a full moon. That's the Purnima. That's the fullness. And then it goes back into a period of darkness again. And so Purnima, meaning full, is when the Guru has had full illumination. It is that one who has gone the whole way and realized their total and complete oneness with God. This is a rare state to have in this world. There are many, and they are legitimate gurus, but they've not had the full experience yet. And what is that full experience? It is the complete and total transformation of your consciousness, to the point where there is nothing but God. Whatever you think, whatever you feel, whatever you perceive, and whatever you do is filled with God consciousness. Now we get glimpses of that. There are moments where we are in a high state of realization, and God is full in that moment. And we feel the fullness of God. We feel the bliss. We feel the uplifting nature of it. We feel the purity of God. But then the mind begins to descend back into human consciousness once again. And as a result of that, the moon goes dark. And it's maddening, really, as you rise up in consciousness and you get more and more accustomed to hearing the voice of God, feeling God within yourself, seeing God within the spiritual eye. And then suddenly everything goes dark and you're back in a limited human expression. And you know darn well the difference between the two. It's plain as day to you. And you can feel it slipping away from you. And it's maddening. But there's a purpose to it becoming maddening. It intensifies our desire. It purifies our mind. When we feel it slipping away like that, and we just so desperately want to have God as a permanent feature in our life, One of the things that happens through the purification of your consciousness is that the mind gets purified in the desire area. Desire and attachment. And desire is that part of you that reaches out for this world. If I only had this person, if I only had this amount of money, if I only had this or that or the other thing, then I would be complete. Then I would be happy. And that desire nature goes on and on and on. It's never as if you have enough. It just goes on to the next thing. It's an endless tide. And so it is only when we learn how to withdraw all the life energy from the afferent and the efferent nerves and draw it into the spine and up the spine to the higher centers. And there we have a sense of joy. There we have a sense of completeness that is full, that requires nothing. We still live in the world, but we're not of the world any longer. Because primarily, we are focused on this spiritual flow coming directly from God. As Mother said, she had a pipeline, a direct pipeline to God. Now, she's not being arrogant and she's not being egotistical, nothing of the sort. In fact, the closer you grow in God consciousness, the less ego you have. Now, until it is complete, the purnima, ego is still there. It's just in the background. And as in Revelations, it talks about that the beast rose back up from the sea. I believe it says that it has 7 heads and 10 crowns. This is all symbolic. 10 is the number for the senses, the 5 senses and the 5 receptors within the brain of the senses. And then the 7 represent the chakras going up and down the primary powerhouses within the chakra system. But the beast is wounded. It's wounded, but it rises up out of the ocean. Now that underneath the ocean is the unconscious. And it rises up, so it comes up with a vengeance. And it wants to reassert itself. It wants to put itself back onto the throne. Now, this is late in the game. This is when somebody has achieved a very high state of realization. And yet the ego is still active. And it still wants what it wants. And therefore, we have to be so careful and not play fast and loose. There are many instances that we can list off in which very highly realized souls became gurus, and then through one means or another, they fell from that grace. They had problems with it. And it's because, perhaps, they began to think a little bit too highly of themselves. The ego begins to insert itself into there. Now, what God proves to you again and again and again is that He is the sole purveyor of His power, of His consciousness, of His realization. And it is best for us to maintain a humble attitude towards God. Now, true humility is the recognition that God is the sole power, the sole intelligence that is coursing through this form and throughout all creation. And when you have that, and you know it through and through, you see, then you have humility. It's not a display. It's not an outer display. People can have outer displays of humility and be the greatest egotists in the world. They're not mutually contradictory. But when you feel that God is the sole and supreme ruler in this universe and within you, then you have true humility. Mother was one time having a conversation with a very great saint, and she said that day that that God had quite an ego. Meaning, I guess, she was talking about herself in some rather grand ways. And finally, the saint looks at Mother, and he says, "Well, Mother, we must remember to have humility." Now, Mother was anything but a vain creature. And when she spoke like that, it was in complete submission to God. That would not be her ordinary way of, of talking about herself, but so oftentimes when she was lifted up in God, she spoke with great force about what God had put her through and all the experiences that she had had. That's complete surrender, you see. For one person, that may be a sign of ego, but for somebody else, it may be the most complete sign of surrender because it's not your nature. As Mother described herself, she always felt that she was the smallest one, the littlest one. And that it wasn't until she actually had achieved complete God realization. So this is one of the great mysteries, isn't it? Because here she is, she's gone the whole way. And yet, there's something inside of her. She says that even in complete God realization, in order to enter into this world, she had to carry some ego with her. Now the difference is that when you're a fully realized being and you wear an ego, you just wear it as an ornament. It's something that God wears but isn't captured by. Whereas from a human standpoint, we interact with the ego, but we're dominated by that ego and it cuts us off from God. We don't see it as an expression of God, but as something that is independent and separate from, you see. And so that's the difference, is that the fully realized God-man or God-woman feels a continuity of God expressing in every part of their lives. Now, that's an easy test for you. That you can go and say, all right, is there any part of my life that is separate from God? Where I start to feel either overproud of myself or a little sorry for myself. And both are just the twin sides, two sides of a single coin, the ego coin. And so it really doesn't make any difference whether you're a bit puffed up or you're a bit down in the mouth. Both are of the ego nature. And so when you feel free from that, then you experience it all as an expression of God and nothing can capture you. So Mother had that surrender, and it came through in different ways, and when she spoke, she could speak so powerfully about her own experiences. And the reason for that is because she was teaching us through those experiences. Her very life were her teachings. And that's the truth, because she lived the life of one who had gone the whole way, from the human to the divine. Now, she is born into this world in a state of purnima, of wholeness. She had already had that complete and full realization before she even incarnated into this world. But she assumed the role of the ego. But she didn't do it in a lighthearted kind of a way. She took on the sins of the world, so to speak. She took on the whole world consciousness. And as she said, whatever any woman has gone through, she herself had gone through. And there's two elements to that. One is that she proved through her own example that you can do it without any advantages of position of birth or where you're born at or what family you come from or any of the rest of it, because she had none of those advantages. And the other aspect of it was that she was taking on the burdens of this world and burning off the karma for it. Now, she stood strong through many of the social changes that went on through the 1960s and the 1970s. And there were so many things that were upsetting the apple cart at the time. And we're living with the results of it. There's a big push now going on for drugs and the normalization of use of drugs and all the rest of it. And Mother stood against that, absolutely. But it wasn't popular at the time. There are those who would like to change things. But we have to look at this life and really see what are the consequences of those choices that we make. I wrote something this morning that I thought you would be interested in. And I entitled it, "That Drug Use is Uncool." There are those who argue for fewer laws for recreational drugs. One grandmother was fired up for the legalization of marijuana, giving me the familiar line that it was less harmful than alcohol. I've also heard this argument from a 14-year-old, wanting the freedom to smoke it daily. This occurred just months before she left her loving family and lived homelessly, traveling all over the country. I've also heard the argument from another 14-year-old just before she stood one late night in her parents' bedroom demanding her bong and stash back from them after she had brought them into the house and kept it there. It turned into an ugly confrontation that led to the police being called because she refused to leave their room. And last night, a late night call from the parents of an individual who brought multiple pipes and stashes on the family vacation. The situation turned ugly once again. Lamp was broken, furniture destroyed, going rock group crazy, and threatening his father with physical harm after they took away his marijuana paraphernalia. Earlier that day, this young man had looked longingly at the homeless who occupied the parks and the waterfront of the city. Daily I see the cost and destruction of the lives of dear ones from drug use. There are those who would make a joke of this, who claim it benign influence. The 14-year-old talked of it being better than alcohol. Now, I don't know any responsible person who would recommend daily use of alcohol to a 14-year-old developing brain. But nevertheless, they try to shame anyone not in favor of the widespread use of drugs. Habit-forming drugs used indiscriminately weaken individuals and the societies they live in. And I cannot find it in me to condone such usage. Really, I feel just the opposite. The British shamelessly hooked China on opium to weaken them, make money, and create more docile subjects. We are currently doing it to ourselves, not having it foisted upon us by an outside agent. Rather, we put the handcuffs on ourselves with determination. Discrimination is seduced by many unhealthy influences that will blithely tell us that right is wrong and wrong is right. However, consequences, the law of cause and effect, work like mathematics. And this push for widespread drug use is not adding up to be a good thing. Now, it feels like oftentimes taking such a position is fighting the tide. But the tide must be fought. What we want is a world that is uplifted, a world in which people have high thinking and simple living, as Master talked about. We want a world where people make choices of health. There are people who get very upset about GMO vegetables, but don't mind it when it's GMO marijuana that's 20 times as powerful as it used to be because it's been modified. This is an amazing thing. There are people who get upset about the pollution in the world, and yet they pollute their bodies in worse concentration than the world has ever been polluted. We must stand firm. We must feel within ourselves that this purity that Mother came to teach us, that Master came to teach us, this wonderful unity of consciousness, this capacity that we all have, every one of us are born into this world with the capacity for divine consciousness, because each and every one of us is a child of God. And that is the truth, and it cannot be changed. And yet, how many barriers do we build between ourselves and the divine through ignorance, through poor use of discrimination, through desire nature that is run rampant? We're all looking for happiness. And Master wrote a beautiful exposition about the science of religion, in which he lays out the case that everybody is looking for happiness. That's a fact. But we look for it in all the wrong places. And we don't look for it with wisdom, with discrimination, with a desire for something higher. It's not right that we don't not only live in a healthy kind of a way, but that we abuse this body, and then we just expect it to keep on doing what it's supposed to do in perfect ways. This law of cause and effect is something that is very, very powerful and can't just be written out. Even Jesus said that everything had to be paid for in the end. Now, great masters like Master, like Mother, they stand as a bulwark against these tides so that we might get rid of some of this insanity where sex and drugs take such a prominent role. Why is it that everything in this world has to be advertised with sex, be laced with sex? Why is it that there's this tremendous push for the use of drugs and alcohol? It's all around us. We live in a sea of it. And unless we are very determined and very steady about it, we can get swept away with that tide. There have been devotees, kriyabans, very sincere ones in the beginning, who end up with cocaine and crack issues, who are alcoholics, who get swept away with greed, whose ego natures drive them into various different ways and paths. And it breaks my heart to see individuals with such great capacity to make such choices. And oftentimes, once they make those choices, they feel bound by them. And they don't turn away from them. It takes great humility to turn away from something when you've made a mistake, and to admit that you made a mistake, and to go back and to humbly ask God for pardon. It is tremendous ingratitude that will not acknowledge that it is by God's grace alone that we live, we breathe, we have our thoughts, we have our being. How is it that we can live so ignorantly and so blithely? Master has said that it was Babaji himself who came to him. We stood on the spot as his beautiful nephew showed us the spot where Master had had the vision or the experience of Babaji coming to him. It is just outside of his attic room where he had prayed to the Divine Mother, and the Divine Mother had appeared to him. And I can tell you for a fact that attic room had tremendous spiritual vibration in it. And he had his little tiger skin rug that was laid out there, and he had his altar. They've kept it exactly the same as Master had it. And so we stood on that spot where Babaji had appeared to him, and Babaji brought a message and had told Master that it was Jesus himself who had asked Babaji to send somebody to the West to bring the techniques, to bring the methods, to bring the truth of original Christianity by which individuals around this world might be able to rise up. Now, no religion has the corner on God. Nobody can claim him as their own. If God be God, then God is universal. And it's not as if you have one form of mathematics in China and another form of mathematics in Africa and another one in South America and another in North America. Mathematics is mathematics. And if it's true, it will prove itself out. And God is no less than that. God is universal. God is true. And destroy all the books on religion. And the spiritually minded will rediscover these great truths. But fortunately, we don't have to rediscover the wheel. If we want to learn anything in this life, then we look to those who have already explored our particular area that we're interested in. And when we find that one who's a real expert on it, then we listen to that one. That one becomes our teacher. And we may discover new truths, there's no doubt about that. But we can greatly accelerate our way to the goal by learning from what's already than understood about any particular subject. And how much so that is true with our spiritual path. The idea that the blind can lead the blind is just such a ridiculous one. And so it is an Eastern term, and guru now has come into the Western lexicon. And it is somebody who is an expert. It is somebody who has something to offer in any specific field, a recognized leading expert. And this isn't so far from the truth. It means taking somebody out of the darkness and into the light. Anybody who enlightens you and lifts you up, makes you better, can be a guru. But if you are spiritually minded and spiritually focused in your life, then having a satguru, having that one who has the experience, the fullness, the purnima of God realization, will then be drawn into your life if you are very fortunate. They will draw you to themselves. I remember my early days when I was reading about these truths and recognizing in many of the Eastern truths something that I felt was missing in my own upbringing in more traditional Christian kinds of ways. And yet I felt like I wasn't really getting to the heart of the issue. And I read a book about a man meeting a guru. And something shifted inside of me. Something changed. It recognized that this is what I needed. I needed to meet somebody who knew the truth. And it set me on to a journey. And I would go and I would listen to different ones who say they were representing the truth, and whether they did or they didn't, none of them quite appealed to me. None of them inspired me. Until I met Mother. And I sat down and I began to listen to Mother. And as I've described before, it felt like my hair was being blown back by a spiritual wind. The power and the truth that she spoke were so tremendous. Now, I didn't understand everything that she said. She used the word God, which I was not so all in favor of at the time. And she used Christ consciousness. And I didn't understand that kind of combination of words. But I recognized that there is something different about Mother, and I wanted to get to the bottom of it. And as I have written, ever since I've been trying to get to the bottom of it. And every time I think I get to the bottom of something, the bottom opens up and it opens into a much vaster universe than I could have imagined before then. And I go on exploring God's body and God's consciousness. It's a tremendous life. I can think of nothing better. I would not even want to think about a life without this part and parcel of the very center of it. And sometimes I still feel like there are some things that I would like to accomplish and to do in this world. Simple things. I would like to get out and do things in the yard or repair something. And I just simply, God doesn't allow it. He's got other work for me to do in that moment. And he draws my mind. It's a fascinating journey. This consciousness is drawn up and it activates certain parts of the brain, and other parts of the brain are left dormant for the moment. And they're parts of the brain that are normally unexplored. Now, this brain is the instrument through which divine consciousness works for the human individual. So if the brain is destroyed, then spirit is not destroyed, conscious is not destroyed, but you may lose the faculty for being able to express that. If somebody has a stroke and loses their power of speech, they still in their spirit have full command over speech. But they may not be able to express it to the world. And so the brain is changed, literally changed, as this divine consciousness and intelligence goes about its work. And it goes through all the different avenues of the brain. And it transforms it. And there are parts that are here in the ajna, the point between the eyebrows, at the top of the head, and various other parts of the head. There is a circuit that goes right straight from right deep within the brain. And it connects with a nerve that goes straight to the top of the head. And when you are ready to leave this body consciously, you see, you focus your attention on that thin thread-like nerve. Now, this is a subtle astral nerve, but once it's broken, it breaks your connection to the brain. And you soar up into spiritual consciousness. We should not feel sorry for those who have lived a life and then go on beyond the beyond, unless they have not lived their life as they should. Then what we feel sorry for is that they fell short of the goals that their soul had in coming. But if it is a life well lived, and that is whether it's for a few minutes or for many, many years, if they have fulfilled the purpose for which their soul comes, then we should celebrate their life. Love the fact that they have come in, made progress. Now, we all make mistakes, so they may have made some mistakes. In all likelihood, they did. But did they make progress gradually and steady towards the goal? And if they did, we can feel good. And the greatest life that there is the life in which one fully and completely realizes God. You give yourself over heart, mind, soul, strength, everything to God. And God takes your life and transforms it. And that's what He did for our beloved mother, for our beloved master. And they suffered so in their life, in a way, in a human way. They certainly did. And even into their later years, they suffered so. But you know, when you lay the axe to a cedar tree, or you snip off of a rose, the fragrance from that can actually increase and grow. Even as that tree is being chopped down and you smell that fresh wood. And its fragrance is really released during that time. And so it is with the God personality. Is that you recognize the divinity with them even greater when the difficulties come. And these great masters took on that suffering for humanity. It is a vicarious atonement, but it doesn't do all the work. We know that that's not true. Modern-day Christians who have formulated that Jesus did all the work, they know that it's not true in their life. They know they still have to struggle. And yet the fact that they are the recipients of tremendous grace of their Guru, whether in a body or out of a body, is undeniable. We had the wonderful experience, Larry and I did once, when we were watching, going through a series of slides that had been given to us by Marjorie, and she'd given us a slide with Meher Baba, and we weren't expecting, we didn't know what was on the reel. And we had been both disturbed by something that one of Master's disciples had been written about him that was very unflattering, and if true, was very wrong indeed. And it both left us with a very sullied feeling. And when that picture of Meher Baba, who Mother had very positive regard for, when it flashed up, it felt as if there were a flash of light come out of that picture, and it just swept through both of us. And it swept us clean. All that residual, all that darkness, all that ugliness was swept away. It's a wonderful sense of purity. This is what a true master does in this world. It changes us. Now, there are those who think, well, I don't want to be told what to do in my life. But the fact is that if you're learning any craft, if you're learning anything at all, you have to subject yourself to the teachings of someone else if you're to make real progress. Otherwise, you're just reinventing the wheel and you may be stuck in mistakes for a long time to come. We don't subject ourselves in order to become slaves of that individual, but rather so that we can learn to attune our thoughts, our minds, our souls to the same vibration, to the same life that animates the master. when we do this, it tremendously accelerates our spiritual growth. And through that, the freedom that we experience in our life. Now, we're all faced with a choice. We all have free will. And we can choose to go with or not to go with. There's no compulsion, nor can there ever be. God has given us an inviolate gift. And that is the gift of our freedom, the gift of free will. But as Friedrich Nietzsche said, you are free, but what are you free for? What do you use your freedom for? What do you use your will for? There are those who go onto the computer and look at, and some of them look up the greatest wisdom, and others go on to internet porn sites. It's both through the same mechanism. It's both the use of the mind. One is uplifted and elevated. The other's mind is brought down and degraded. So we have to choose, you see, and we have to choose wisely. But if we choose wisely, if we follow the path that the Masters have laid out for us, if we seek our attunement with God, Christ, Gurus, this is a Maha Mantra. It's a great mantra, perhaps the greatest. God, Christ, Gurus. If you're ever bothered by anything, loudly chant in your mind or out through your lips, God, Christ, Gurus. And you will feel an instant change. The greatest way that we can honor these gurus, to say that we love them, is to emulate them and to seek the same goal that they sought in their lives. I think the one common element between all the masters, whatever the differences in their personalities, they had absolute clarity on the goal. And you can pray for that and ask for that purity of intention and desire so that you might not waste even a moment of this life, that you will utilize every experience in order to transform yourself, and like the philosopher's stone, you become transformed into the very element that is touching you. When the guru touches you, turns you into a God being, even as they are. This may seem fantastical to some, beyond belief to others, but it is the truth. I have experienced it in my own life. And the good news is, it's really even better than good news. It's the most incredible news. Is that it can be true for you as well. If you will chant with me, my Lord, I adore thee. My Lord, I adore thee, lay my life before thee, how I love you. My Lord, I adore thee, lay my life before thee. For thee, how I love you. My Lord, I adore thee. Lay my life So with God, Christ grew, ever resounding throughout our beings, resonating in every cell of our body. Let us dedicate ourselves, body, mind, and soul, unto the greatest quest known to mankind, the greatest adventure, the most exciting adventure, and the most rewarding adventure there can ever be, and seek out our God realization. If you please pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my being. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with You. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Peace. Bliss. Amen. I'm reminded of when Fred Kamitz would come up. He drove up from Portland, nearly Portland, Oregon area, every week to see Mother, and oftentimes, most times, twice a week for a long time. And when he would come, he would get down on his hands and knees and pronoun completely to Mother. And Mother oftentimes would say that she would scold Fred and tell him not to do such a thing, that she didn't want it and didn't need that kind of thing. And yet he would do it every single time. And I felt that in Fred doing it, we all got to partake in pronouming at Mother's feet. The only time that I really got to be able to do that was at Kriya Yoga initiations. And then she would allow that. Otherwise, she discouraged that kind of thing. But I remember touching her feet and feeling such a powerful electric current flowing through her whole body and coming into mine. Just so many memories rushing to my head about Mother, and just so much I would like to say, but only so much allowed to say, at least in the moment. But I just want to tell you from my own heart what a tremendous, tremendous, powerful, wise guru we had in Mother, and how much in my heart she moves in me still, and I feel her thoughts, I feel her soul, I feel her spirit. And it is always of the most uplifting and beautiful nature. It wasn't always easy. Oftentimes I would come away from my time with Mother with a headache, and just the power was so tremendous, and I was such an incapable vessel of being able to channel all the power that just kind of sloughed off from Mother just by being around her. It's like the power of a huge waterfall that just standing near it, you can hear the ground shake and you can feel the power, and you're not even standing in the waterfall, you're standing next to it. It's just the byproduct of being around it. And Mother was such a tremendous power for God. I can easily believe that she changed this world in very significant ways, and that we will continue to see the changes that she helped to bring about for a long time to come. We are a small group here and gathered in many different places. But you know, with a few determined people, a small group of people, very determined, very focused upon God, can change this world and help to bring it into a new light and avoid many of the darknesses that would otherwise befall it. So make earnest effort in your remembrance of God. Keep your mind on God, as Mother would say. My love, my blessings with you now and always.